Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's a big season for the Two-Tone Blue.
We're going to let the past do the talking.
It's time to break it all down with Chase McCabe and ESPN's Teron Davenport. This is Chase and TD.
It's time to go eat, baby.
On Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
That's right. Let's talk some Tennessee Titans here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Alongside Teron Davenport of ESPN, I am Chase McCabe. It is Chase and TD every Friday from 6 to 8. Calvin Smith on the ones and twos behind the glass. Teron sporting his Mets hat.
That's right. That's
through and through a Mets fan. And
no
I like
fair
that.
Weather. No fair weather, man.
Hey, we talked to one of your former pitchers today, R.A. Dickey. He was on the show.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then the Charlie Phil Negro knuckleballer.
Yeah. Yep. So he was on. But we're going to hit some Titans. And guess what? For the first time in a while, we have a win to talk about. And it's only the second time since they've been the Titans that they have defeated the L.A. Chargers. But they did it. And Teron, you were there. It couldn't be easy because nothing is easy. It took a goal line stand by a very, very good defense and some reviews and everything, maybe some questionable calls by the head coach. But here we are talking about a win. The Titans sit at 3-4.
Yeah, it was a really good win, too. You mentioned the defense and what they were able to do, the calls going their way. It was almost like Mike Vrabel had that rabbit's foot in the pocket there, because they did get some good fortune their way. But offensively, man, I really want to get into that and just the rhythm that they had on offense. It was outstanding. You saw things very much on schedule. It was like, all right, three-step, throw. Five-step, throw.
Yep.
There isn't much hesitation. There's a plan at the line of scrimmage, and Tannehill knew where he wanted to go with the football, and it was right from jump street, right? That first throw that he made to Jonnu Smith, really good throw, and it's something that a lot of the better quarterbacks do, right? They throw a receiver open, because Jonnu was actually covered on that, but he threw it over that, and it was outside, like a back shoulder throw. He threw it over that back shoulder and turned him back away from the safety. Big play, started off. And that actually was one of the ones that kind of gave Tannehill a little not confidence, but a little swagger. It's like you get right into it and get involved. And he felt good from the start.
Yeah, he did something that I really wanted to see, too. And that was, you know, because I brought this up to you. I was a little concerned about being on the same page with the receivers. So who did he go to first? He went to somebody that he's practiced with. He's gotten a lot of time with Jonnu Smith. So he went for the comfort zone at first, getting that rhythm, and then we saw him spread the ball around. A thing that has been impressive has been this defense, that the defense was able to hold their opponents to 20 or less, and they've done that all year. But at some point, the offense was going to have to carry their weight. They were going to have to do something. They did that against L.A., and you can credit Tannehill and the quarterback change. You can credit Arthur Smith. You can credit the receivers. Hell, you can credit the offensive line. But they all came together as one cohesive unit, which is something we have been waiting for all year to see, and they finally did that. That was a team win, and I was happy to see it. But I really liked the offense. I thought Arthur Smith called a really good game too.
Yeah, he did call a really good game, and the thing that really also stood out to me was there was a groove that, and it was one drive. A.J. Brown had, I think, three catches. Around 40-something yards on that drive.
Yeah.
And it was a slant he ran. It was that pick, that natural pick play, which is an excellent job by Arthur Smith. Cause, and people want to question Arthur Smith's play calling, and I get it. But I think this is an example of where he is as a play caller and a play designer. Because you had that natural pick in there. You know that you have a guy in A.J. Brown who not only – makes the catch unsecure. He accelerates through the catch, and that leads to yards after the catch. Leads to us calling him what? The Yak Monster.
Yak
right?
And Monster.
And it's all a part of that. You're giving your guy an opportunity to do what he does best. They hit him on two slants, and then he ran another route. We used to call it a four route, where you release off the ball, you break to the post at 10, and you break 2 yards into the post, and then you throttle back to the receiver. And it was the route that he did on that one, and he caught it. in traffic, you know, and made the catch. And it's just something that you like to see. There is a rhythm developing, even with Corey Davis. I mean,
yeah.
We talked earlier about the broken plays, you know, going off schedule with Marcus Mariota and how that was something that they had to do. Well, they did it almost to perfection on one of their plays where Tannehill, he stepped up in the pocket, slid to his left, and then broke the pocket. Corey Davis ran to the left, and it was a pretty nice BB that he threw to him on the sideline. So you're seeing really good things from that perspective.
I also saw an offensive line that looked like they were in sync, and that was even losing the right tackle and the right guard to injury. Looks like they're probably going to be all right, but they had to bring in some backups and only gave up 2 sacks on the day. Taylor Lewan went penalty-free, played by far his best game of the season in his short season after coming back from suspension. Really liked what I saw out of the offensive line. Now, I think some of that has to credit what you were just saying, the quarterback play and being on schedule. That makes the job easier for the offensive line, but I will give credit to them as well.
Yeah, and even Tannehill, he gave credit to the offensive line. Coach Vrabel gave credit. Arthur Smith yesterday gave credit to the offensive line. And when all of that is rolling, guess what else you're able to do? Run the football.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to Arthur Smith's play calling and play design, that touchdown that Henry scored, he did a good job of getting Henry into the alley and getting him downhill. Now, we get to talk to Henry on Thursdays, and I actually talked to Henry in the scrum, but I specifically asked him about some of the things that he's able to do, specifically why he's not bouncing runs outside as much, and also what makes him so good running downhill. This is what he had to say.
Really just taking what the defense gave me and just getting downhill. I know it's going to be, you know, like I said, those 4 to 5 yard runs turn into more as the game goes on. But, you know, it's going to be dirty runs, and, you know, just got to go out there and just do my job, press, read, just get downhill. That's all I've been focusing on. I'm really bouncing, not trying to do too much. Just go out there and take what the game gives me.
And we're actually seeing Coach Art put plays together, like scheme plays to get you downhill. Why is it that you're such an effective downhill runner?
You know, I feel like when I get my pass forward and I make contact that, you know, I can run, you know, through contact and get positive gains, fall forward. You know, some runs that may look like, you know, 1 or 2 yards or 3 yards turn to 4, 5, or 6. So it's about me just being physical, getting downhill, making my reads, and, you know, finishing the run.
Derrick Henry with TD.
And that's the thing, getting downhill, right? When you have 6'3", 250, borderline, you know, hovering around, if you give that an opportunity to get some steam towards the line of scrimmage, and that's why if you'll notice, a lot of times, Henry is a good 7 yards deep. And I asked him about it because I was just curious myself and watching how they have things set up in practice where they have a box. When they go through individual period, they have a box, and then they have lines extending from that box. But that box is to make sure the RBs get their depth. And Henry said it's not something necessarily that they do for him. I think it is. And I think they do that to get him that steam going towards the line of scrimmage. But once he does do that, man, it's tough to bring something like that down.
Something that I like, I go back and I look at all the stats. They ran 30 pass plays. They ran 29 run plays.
Balance.
I call that a balanced offense. Yeah. And that's another thing that I wanted to see from the Titans is – balancing the run and the pass, and they did a good job with that. You know, obviously when they had control of the game, had the lead, they're going to run the ball a little bit more. You can question the fourth down play there at midfield. I was fine with it. I had no problem. Where I had the problem is you've already gambled. Why not challenge the spot?
Yeah,
because you basically you could double down at that point. You got nothing to lose. So
I
didn't understand, but I was fine going for it on fourth and short with the quarterback sneak. I was totally cool with that.
And that was one of the times where coach's stomach and the analytic part of things matched. And when you get those two things that come together, it's usually good results.
Just a quick note on the analytics part of that. Pre-snap, that decision to go for it boosted their win probability by 13%. That's a really complex algorithm out there, but all around, going for it was right.
No, I mean,
it was the right decision.
I'm not an analytics guy like Calvin. I'm learning because of being around Calvin, but I could tell you Like, I didn't even need numbers. I've been like, it tells you, the percentages will tell you in watching football, as long as I have, you should go for it there.
Yeah.
Try and close out the game. So, but what I didn't understand is why you didn't challenge with three timeouts. But the defense did their job. They end up winning the game 23-20, and so they improve to 3-4 in a position to hit 500 with a win this weekend. Definitely a lot of good things, some things that you can clean up. What we will discuss over the course of the show is, can they do it again? Because that's the big thing. They have to do it again. And one thing that I've been concerned about this week is, can the defense continue to carry the water, or are they going to break at some point? The Bucs put up a lot of points. They average a lot of points.
Yeah.
So you're asking the defense that I think has averaged 16 a game, you know, to continue that against an offense that puts up a lot of points. I think this offense is going to have to do their job as well.
The Bucs have scored 24 points. I think it's four games in a row.
Yeah.
So make no mistake about it. Now, fortunately, they're going to be missing some of their key players, but, you know, and we'll get into that later in the show. But I think as long as you have 13 and 12 lining up on the outside, you're in good shape. Jameis has some guys that he could go to.
Godwin has become the guy.
Godwin. Yeah. You know what, though?
I know what you're going to say, and you're right.
That daggone Mike Evans is still that dude, man.
He's still that dude.
And you know the thing is, he's a top five receiver that nobody gives credit for being a top five receiver.
It's true. I mean, Jameis has two really, really good receivers that he can go to. Plus, you know, when you get good Jameis, he's pretty darn good in his own right.
Yeah.
He's Teron Davenport. I am Chase McCabe. When we come back, we'll talk to Jenna Lane. She covers the Bucks for ESPN, like Teron does here. We'll talk to her next and get the opponent's view here on Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm so excited. A little Michael Jackson. That's MJ right. On a Friday.
I couldn't get my voice high enough. I tried. You want me to do it again?
Do it again.
Oh!
There you go. That's good.
About to break some windows, man.
That's good. Our next guest might hang up before we even have her on.
Nah, my homegirl won't do that to me.
Let's say hello to Jenna Lane. She covers the Bucks for ESPN. Jenna, how are you?
Hang up. Are you kidding me? I love MJ. I once did an entire cheerleading individuals routine choreographed to nothing but Michael Jackson. Like the entire routine was nothing but Michael Jackson song. So I am all in favor of this. Although Teron, we got to talk a little bit about you trying to hit those high notes. Not that I could do any better. I think I'd actually do far worse.
Yeah, I just can't do it. And full disclosure, so everyone knows Jenna and I, we go back to before ESPN days.
Okay.
And we talked a lot about her cheerleading. And that's why I put MJ in, because she told me how she likes him.
Look at that.
So, you know, always try to play to your guest. Make sure that you bring them in the right way.
Absolutely. All right, Jenna, let's talk about this game. Jameis Winston, are we getting good Jameis or bad Jameis? Because I think that is the big question on everyone's mind, coming off a terrible, terrible performance in London and then the bye week. Which Jameis will be coming to Nashville?
Yeah, he hasn't had too many instances where he's had multi-interception games back-to-back weeks, but you're right, it's like Jekyll and Hyde with him. You know, just before that game in London, a couple weeks before that, the conversation was that he was playing some of his best ball ever. He threw 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You know, the Bucs put up 55 points on the Rams. Now, granted, some of that was because of the way their defense had played. Their defense had scored some touchdowns as well, but you know, he was doing a really good job. He was taking care of the football, but he was also, you know, taking chances down the field. It was a nice mix of that. You know, they had a balanced attack. They were running the ball fairly well, you know, mixing that play action. But what we saw in London, I'm scratching my head, you know, because there was a game that was like that last year too against the Bengals, and he got benched in that game, and that was when Ryan Fitzpatrick came in. But you know, between that and then in week one, he threw 2 pick sixes, 3 interceptions total. It's really just, I can't even put my finger on what it is with Winston. Ever since, you know, Bruce Arians got here, he has told him, you know, we don't want you to have to try to be Superman. We want the guys around you to help you out. And there have been instances where he said, Arians has said, you know, the guys around him need to play better. I know on that first pick, Mike Evans did not run a good route there. James Bradbury, you know, arrived there first before he did. And Evans even said that afterwards. But just when it's happening over and over and over again, you know, you really start to wonder. And this isn't anything new. You know, even though Arians has said, look, we're six games in, this isn't new for Bucs fans. We're going on year five now, and this has been an issue since he was in college. He turned the ball over a ton in college, too. But the difference was that he had a defense that could get the ball back, and also the talent disparity against a lot of FSU's opponents. You know, their defense, every one of them started an NFL game. You know, you look back at that, it's like, well, yeah, you know, no wonder he was pretty fearless with the ball and was just kind of slinging it around, and who cares if he turned it over? They just got the ball back, and they marched down the field again and scored, or they scored defensively. He didn't have to worry about this kind of stuff.
Now, I remember before the season, we were talking, and you had mentioned Bruce Arians and how you felt he was going to make a big-time difference for Jameis. What have you seen from a progression standpoint for Jameis as a quarterback?
You know, in camp, I noticed he was being a lot more decisive with the ball. You know, he was making quicker decisions, which I thought was extremely important because, you know, unlike Dirk Cutter, you know, Arians doesn't do mass protect, right? Like, he's expecting the quarterback and he's expecting the offensive line to be able to, you know, call out the protections. He's expecting those guys, the offensive linemen, to protect. And then it's pretty much, hey, you're on your own, because he wants, you know, running backs, he wants tight ends, he wants those guys to be involved as much as they can in the passing game. And so with that, you know, it's made Winston a lot more vulnerable. And, you know, you guys can understand that in Tennessee, because Winston and Mariota have been sacked, you know, more than any other quarterbacks in the league this year. So, you know, that's made it challenging. But still, you know, Arians said after the London game, and they had a bye week since then, so it wasn't last week, it was the week before, he said, you know, some of those sacks that he took, he was just holding onto the ball, you know, too long. It was three or four of them, you know, were on him. And, you know, he's just got to be able to make better decisions and be more decisive with the ball. I know that that's also been an issue with Mariota as well. So the decisiveness was good. It was starting to show in camp. But, you know, as of late, it hasn't necessarily been there, though. So, you know, I think a big part of it is the fact that he hasn't had the protection from the offensive line. Because when the protection did hold up against the Rams, for instance, which they completely eliminated Aaron Donald in that game, yeah, he was like a non-factor, you know, Winston was fine.
Jenna, O.J. Howard, it was announced today he's going to be out for this game, and I know that he hasn't had the season thus far that everybody would hope for him, only targeted 18 times, but how does that change the game plan for the Bucs without O.J. Howard?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, in talking to the coaching staff, they're trying to make a more of a concerted effort to get their tight ends involved in the passing game, because they don't have that luxury of a third receiver like they did when they had Adam Humphrey, the guy that you guys have gotten to know pretty well. You know, and that was Winston's guy underneath. They haven't had that. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting because, you know, even though this isn't ideal, you don't draft a guy as high as you do with O.J. Howard just to have him block, but that's kind of been just what he has been lately, because even when the ball has gone his way, he's been dropping the ball a lot. In fact, he's got, you know, the second highest drop rate in the league of any position. So because of that, you know, it's made things challenging. A lot of times, you know, defenders are disrupting, you know, his routes at the line of scrimmage. That was something Jameis told us about this week. But, yeah, not having him, it does hurt them as far as blocking goes, because Cam Brate's just not a blocking tight end. They'll have to rely on Anthony Auclair for that. You know, thankfully they do have Brate, though, because, you know, he's a guy that I think is starting to work more into this offense, and he remains still a big part of what Jameis Winston tries to do in the red zone. But, yeah, it's been really interesting this year because, as you guys know, Bruce Arians not really known much for using the tight ends, and we had heard all throughout the summer, no, they're going to be a big part of this offense. They're going to be a big part of this offense. We just really haven't seen that yet.
Now, to flip it to the other side, while O.J. Howard is out, I retweeted your post earlier about JJP possibly being activated. How has he been able to come back, and in your opinion, where is he?
Yeah, well, Arians called him a freak of nature, and I think that that's pretty spot on because, you know, when I was talking to JJP about that this week, I said, you know, did you ever think you wouldn't make it back? I mean, not many people come back from fractured necks. I mean, Delvin Breaux was the only guy that came to mind when I made that comment. He said, well, not many people come back from blowing off their hands either. And that was kind of the quote of the week. And And it's true, though, because not only is he coming back, but and we don't know how many snaps he's going to play. We don't even know if he's going to be active yet or not. But he could if he absolutely had to be. You know, the Bucs would have to make a roster move in order to do that because, you know, he hasn't been activated yet to the 53-man roster. He's still in that 21-day practice window where they don't have to use all of it. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, he can get back into shape. But he hasn't really needed 21 days. He's only had a week of practice with this team. But Arian said his conditioning really hasn't missed a beat. And I'm scratching my head going, how? Yeah. This guy did not practice in the offseason with them. He wasn't there during training camp, mini camp. You know, most guys need a little bit of time to get their legs under them. And even when they do play in the preseason and stuff, it still takes a while from a conditioning standpoint. But in his case, you know, Arian's just said that. He's not even really sure how, to be honest. I don't think anybody is. So, you know, some of the folks around him, some of the coaches think it's just a testament to his will. And they can see the difference from him as far as the kind of leader he is, you know, helping guys out on the sideline. You know, Shaq Barrett can't wait to work with him because that's a guy whose tape he's just watched so much of, you know, once he signed out, he was going to Tampa. But as far as what you can expect if he does, in fact, play, and that's going to ultimately be up to, you know, a doctor to clear him, It wouldn't be a ton of snaps there. I mean, they would have to kind of play it by ear, but just kind of some snaps sprinkled in there just to kind of get him used to it. At least that's what Arian said. He said he's certainly not going to be playing 90 snaps out there.
And I have to correct myself. I said JJP. Obviously, I meant JPP. He is different, though. You know, this is a guy, and I'm sure you could relate to this, the backflips. You know, when he was coming out as a prospect, 19 straight backflips is not something – you see too often. But when you look at another prospect, Devin White, he was here and it was cool talking to him when he was down here for the draft. Where is he? Is he back full go or what's the status of Devin White?
Man, I've loved getting to know Devin White and I've loved watching him. I mean, the first practice of OTAs, it wasn't even a camp, but it was when the first time that the rookies after rookie camp got to practice with the veterans, he picked off Jameis Winston. I want to say it might have been the first pass of OTAs. And that, to me, that really sent a message of, okay, this is the type of guy that you're getting. You know, from the get-go, he has assumed the role as the leader of the defense. You know, he's the guy that's calling the defensive plays in the huddle. He's wearing the green helmet, but he missed a couple weeks because he had a sprained MCL. He suffered it in week two against the Panthers. He was making a tackle at Christian McCaffrey. And we saw a little bit of that, you know, him just not quite having his legs under him in that nationally televised game in London where he got stiff-armed by McCaffrey. But I can tell folks that knowing this guy and the way he works and how much he loves being out there, and I'm sure you picked up on it when you talked to him in the draft, you know, that stiff arm from McCaffrey, that is not the last you're going to see of Devin White. I have all the confidence in the world in this young guy. Because he's smart, he's instinctive. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, as much, and you know this from watching Todd Bowles, you know, as much as he loves to do those double and triple A gap blitzes, you know, Devin White is a big part of that because he's very, very quick off the ball. He's a guy you can even use off the edge too. You know, he's just a guy that you can really trust in a lot of situations. And he's going to become the tackling machine that Levante David is. So, you know, unfortunately, he just was kind of getting his legs under him in that game. But I think, you know, maybe it doesn't happen this week. Maybe it's the next week. You know, he's certainly going to be in for a test with the way this Titans team runs the ball so well. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be something special.
Real quick, before we let you go, I mean, Todd Bowles has a lot of toys in the toy box to use on defense, but Shaq Barrett, as you alluded to earlier, is one of those. He's already surpassed his career high in sacks. He sits with 9 on the year. What are the Titans going to have to do to slow down Shaq Barrett?
Well, we've seen a lot of teams start to do it because Shaq has been rendered sackless the last two games, which is pretty remarkable that, you know, he's still tied, at least the last time I checked, was still tied with Myles Garrett for the league lead with 9 sacks, despite not having two and not having any in the last two games. But, you know, teams are starting to chip at him. They're double-teaming him. You know, they're kind of doing all those things that you would anytime you've got a top pass rusher, which is why it's so important, I think, for the guys around him to kind of step it up because, you know, even though, you know, when this happens to everybody, I mean, look how Aaron Donald, you know, when he started the year off with the Rams, people were talking about that as well. You know, when teams key in on you, it makes things difficult. You've really got to rely on the guys around you. But they are starting to get a lot more push up the middle with Vita Vea, with Ndamukong Suh. Carl Nassib is starting to come on, so that's helping them. And if they do get JPP back, that'll certainly help kind of take the pressure off of him. But he's hungry. He is really itching to get a takedown. He's definitely not a guy that's gotten complacent or anything like that. And I also think that he'll be able to bust through this plateau at some point because, if you guys have watched his tape, I've been really impressed, not just with his pass rush moves, but he's got some counter moves. A lot of these young pass rushers, that's where their roadblock is because they don't have these counter moves developed or they just don't have enough tools in their toolbox. It can be difficult for them to kind of, winning those battles against some of the better offensive linemen in the league. But he's got it. I think he needs the guys around him to just help him out and play a little bit better. And so, too, it'll help if the guys on the back end can help him out, too, because one thing I've noticed, like Kyle Allen, for instance, he's getting rid of the ball really quickly. Same with Teddy Bridgewater. It makes it difficult to get those sacks.
Jenna Lane, she covers the Bucks for ESPN. Hey, we appreciate the time as always, and we'll see you Sunday. Thanks,
absolutely.
Jenna.
Looking forward to it.
All right. You have a good night. And look, Shaq Barrett, I told you before the show, I'm excited to see him play. But, career high already, but the Titans are going to have to watch out for him. When we come back, I know you had a one-on-one with Rashawn Evans, so we will hear that. Plus, talk a little bit about this guy that the Titans got.
Yeah.
He got the
Vrabel
play.
Vrabel said God sprinkled a little extra dust on him.
Yeah.
See Jefferson. We're talking.
Jefferson, well, I just gave it away right there. It's Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Michael Jackson on a Friday, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Chase, Teron, Calvin.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Hey, you and D-Mace would be on the same page because he's right. All about some MJ, too. So.
Hey, man, like I told you on the break, man, Lost Boys, they have a song called Music Makes Me High. I'm high right now off of music, man.
I do love some good music, and that's what we have here tonight. So, Jeffrey Simmons makes his debut. We discussed that on the show last week of would he be active. They ended up making the roster move. Right. Not only was he active, he was active.
He made me blow the whistle on myself, man.
Yeah.
I had to blow the whistle on myself because I didn't think he was going to have an impact.
Yeah, well, he had a sack, and then that last play of the game was that we talked to Wesley Woodyard this week, and he was like, guys, that was Big Jeff. I guess they call him Big Jeff. He was like, that was Big Jeff that caused that play.
Yep.
I mean, what a remarkable recovery. Tears his ACL in February. That makes him drop in the draft, gets taken by the Titans in the first round, and then makes his debut in mid-October of his rookie season.
Multiple draft analysts and even multiple GMs had him top five.
Sure.
That last play you mentioned, man, he folded up 75 like a banquet chair. You know what I'm saying? It was ridiculous. And when you have that type of power that he has, it's just he's something special. That's really the bottom line. And it's jarring to offensive linemen when he puts his hands on him. You could really see it. Even not only that sack, but then you also or the play at the end, the sack was he got a good punch and then he had the game with Daquan Jones. But the one that really stood out to me was the tackle for loss.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, he absolutely jacked that center, put one hand on each number and just pushed him all the way back. And Melvin Gordon got the football and there was nothing he could do. And that's the type of impact that a guy like that could have.
Yeah. So when I watched him, when I saw the sack and I saw that play at the end of the game, I know he wears 98, but I had to kind of rub my eyes because I thought I saw 92.
Yeah.
He reminded me of Albert Haynesworth. And I know, don't make comparisons. They're different players.
No, but that's a good comparison.
But I think it's a really good comparison because Albert Haynesworth was the type of guy that you had to respect because you knew that if you didn't double team, if you didn't do a little extra for him, it was going to hurt you. And I think Jeffrey Simmons can be that. Albert Haynesworth actually joined us today on Darren Donick and Chase and gave a glowing review of Jeffrey Simmons.
He impressed the heck out of me. I mean, like, I know he was strong, and then I was saying that when he drafted him and stuff, and I was really a little bit worried about him, coming back this early and playing. But just watching him, I mean, super strong. He controls the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's going to be unbelievable. I mean, I still want him to get healthy because he's not, I don't think he's 100% healthy because that was one play where he didn't have the strength to push off his left leg that he would have. And then if he had that strength, I mean, it would have been a great play. So he just got to get healthy. But, yeah, I think if they can literally kind of how Schwartz did me, you know, later in my career with the Titans, of taking the plow off the racehorse and then letting other guys just work around him, it's going to be extremely special for the Titans.
That's Albert Haynesworth on Jeffrey Simmons. And I love that line of taking the plow off the racehorse, because you can make the argument Albert Haynesworth was that. And once they did that, when Jim Washburn and Jim Schwartz, you know, really started working with Albert Haynesworth, and, you know, Albert grew up a little bit. There were some immaturity issues when he first came out of the University of Tennessee. But Jeffrey Simmons, I don't see that at all. But if they just take the reins back and it's like, hey, this is a special player, we need to treat him and such, he can be something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You got to make sure the reins are taken off and let him do what he does. You make the Albert Haynesworth comparison. I moved it a little bit closer in time to Fletcher Cox.
Right.
But either way, the three, right? Jeffrey Simmons, Fletcher Cox, Albert Haynesworth. These are guys that will absolutely destroy. You hear me?
Yeah.
Destroy a game plan. And the reason why I go to Cox is because, like Fletcher Cox, Jeffrey Simmons, I mean, his first sack came this way. You could line him up as a DN and still get production. You can't usually do that with D-tackle.
Right.
But that just is a testament to the skill set that he brings. Now, when you look at them, right, Fletcher Cox, behind him, he has Nigel Bradham getting 100 tackles consistently, right? Albert Haynesworth had Keith Bullock.
Yeah, and Kyle VandenBosch, too.
You're right, next to him.
Yeah, next to him.
The thing is, what the common theme that I'm talking about is, most of the time when you have a destructive guy like that, you got a linebacker behind him licking his chops.
Salivating.
I talked to Rashawn Evans about this, and he has some good things to say, but also he surfaced this week with a new piece of equipment, so I made sure I asked him about that because I know a lot of the fans were interested in that. So let's see what Rashawn Evans had to say in this week's Talking with TD 101.
First thing I want to ask you is about the collar. You saw a difference in your equipment yesterday.
Yeah.
What was behind that?
Well, I had an injury in the game, but it was I had like a stinger or whatever, so I wanted to try to, you know, try to help myself out with just, you know, pinching that thing again, and you know, I just probably was gonna wear it this game to see how it felt. If it was good, so I might just have to wear it for the rest of the season.
Is that something you've worn in the past?
Yeah, I don't worn it in the past. I mean, obviously, I hate wearing it. I mean, because, you know, it's a little different. I haven't really worn it as much. But, I mean, if it's going to keep me safe, then, you know, I got to wear it for sure.
Starting to see you really triggered this year, racking up the tackles and those type of things. What's behind that? What is different for you?
I was just saying being more patient, just letting the game come to me, just trusting my instincts, and really just, you know, whenever I feel like I need to go, you know, really believe in it. Don't second guess myself, and that's the main thing. Just not second guessing myself on anything. Just really believing in my ability.
Then when you see the guys up front, you know, you have now Simmons up there getting that penetration.
Yeah.
You got Daquan, two gapping, you
no
got
doubt.
Jarrell doing what he does.
No doubt.
How much does that keep you as a linebacker? Mm-hmm. How much does that keep you clean and allow
you to
come?
Oh no doubt.
That's
what any linebacker in the league would like to have that, man. It's just the fact that you got two guys that are very disruptive in the front that help, you know, get those guards and those tackles up off of you, because, you know, you want to be able to run free and be able to, you know, help out, make tackles, or you know, just the fact that those guys are being able to make penetration, you want to be able to make plays too, you know what I'm saying? So you know, with Jarrell, with Daquan, with Jeff, all those guys that's eating up there in that front, man, you know, it helped any linebacker, you know, just to be able to make plays.
There's always that running debate whether a player turned to a coach is better than a guy who never played being a coach. What are some of the advantages that Coach Ty, having played How does that help him relate to you guys as a position group?
I would say he just understands the game a little bit better as far as when you're in the game and when you played in the league, you know, you have a better understanding of how things work. You know, most of the stuff that happens in a game, you know, it's unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And being able to prepare for unpredictable type of things and knowing that, you know, it's not so much about, you know, drawing something up and being like, this, they're going to run this. It's more about, okay, if they do get this, react off of this. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different understanding of the game. So the fact that he's able to, you know, been in the league and coaching at the same time, he got a leg up on a lot of these coaches that's never played.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you a Bama question. Mm-hmm. Every week it seems like you're going against a former teammate.
Oh, for a fact.
OJ.
OJ.
Not playing. You disappointed.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed, man. I was gonna see if I could get at least a tag or get a tackle off him, but you know, any guys that I play against, any guys that's from Bama, I want them to be as healthy as possible for the season, man. I want the boys to have as much successful. Much success in the season and in their careers, man, because, you know, that's a good representation of just where we came from, you know. You know, obviously, the thing about Alabama players is that we can't last, is that, you know, we're injury prone and all that other stuff. So, but, you know, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be able to, you know, bounce back and be able to, you know, play ball again for sure.
Last question. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a thunder and lightning, right? You got Ronald Jones, flashy, speedy running back, Peyton Barber. Yeah. I don't want to call him a crash test dummy, but, like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of contact with his game. What stands out when you look at those two?
I think the speed. I think a lot of these guys, I think they're a little underrated, too. I think the league don't talk about it as much. Because I feel like, you know, just from, you know, the guy, what's his number 27?
That's Jones.
Yes, Jones. That's Jones. Yeah, Jones. I feel like he's one of the most talented. Probably the most talented out of the two, and number 44 too. He's really good. So just that whole core right there, they three deep, man. I feel like they can wear down any defense. Just the fact of how they run hard. They run like, you know, they're looking for contact, and two, they got enough ability and athleticism to break tackles to get to the second level. So, you know, it's gonna be a challenge for me and the linebackers, D line, and, you know, that's what we like, man. We like playing against players like that because, you know, it only makes us better.
Right.
Being able to go against those guys, you know, all it's gonna do is just, you know, create some type of understanding of how, you know, a lot of these running backs, just the way these guys are running nowadays, you know, the era is starting to get more of like a blend of speed and power too. So if you ain't got that, you know, it's gonna be hard for you to make it out in the league, especially at running back. So to be able to face against that, you know, it only helps linebackers get better.
That's Rashawn Evans one-on-one talking with TD. And a reminder, we have upgraded our podcast platform, so you can go search Talking with TD in iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all of that stuff. Rate, subscribe, review, 5 stars.
That's right. And Chase and TD is on there, too. So
check that out. We'll have more on this. We'll react to what Rashawn had to say. And also, Adam, hang tight. We'll take your call as well. You're listening to Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back on Chase and TD.
Yeah.
ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, or Teron Jackson.
That's right.
Calvin Smith behind the glass. Before we give our thoughts on Rashawn Evans, very good stuff. Again, rate, subscribe, review. Talking with TD, just search that. Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can get that straight to your device. Let's say hello to Adam. He wants to weigh in on Jeffrey Simmons. Adam, what's up?
Hey, Chase, let me ask you, man. You said you listen to all three shows. How much do I call the show? It's pretty astronomical, right? I call too much.
You don't call too much. We like it when you call.
I appreciate that, man. Let me just say, this is my favorite show, man. You know, I listen to all of them, and this one, you two are good together, man, and you've taken strides, Chase. From when you, it's cool to watch you grow up professionally, and this show right here is just like the best of it, man. So I just want to say, y'all keep doing the show, man. I like it. I was going to ask you, Teron, because I see Big Jeff, man. I get so excited to see Big Jeff as a season ticket holder, and I don't even think that dude's 100%. Like, you look at him, there's no way coming off 8 months that he is 100%. So I don't know if you see that and what the possibilities could be for him.
Adam, first of all, thank you for the kind words about the show. We need to get him Ryan Poore's phone number. That's what we need to do.
Yeah.
But no, real talk, though, Jeffrey Simmons, Adam is right. He isn't 100%, and that's the thing that's so daggone crazy, is he's not 100%, and you see him absolutely blowing up. Like, I'm not talking about just winning. Like, he is blowing up. How many times did you see the offensive lineman that he went against literally on the ground?
Yeah.
That says a lot, man. And, like, these are grown men. Like, this is a grown 300-pounder. That dude has a family. He probably has a wife. He probably has kids. So, you know, he doesn't want to go out there and get embarrassed like that. But he – multiple guys got violated by Jeffrey Simmons. Now, I will say this, though. Ryan Jensen, and this is something that we talked about on Talking with TD. Ryan Jensen, 66, the center for the Bucks. I remember him in Baltimore. And let me tell you, he has no chill. That dude goes hard all the time. He plays through the echo of the whistle. I remember in practices in Baltimore, he – and you know what, dadgummit, I should have asked Kamale Correa about that. But let me tell you, this dude was getting into more fights than a little bit. He was getting into more fights than a little bit. And it's just because how he plays. Why am I bringing Jensen up? Well, obviously because he's going against Jeffrey Simmons this week. Listen, man, it's a cold world out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, the NFL, it's a cold world. Dog eat dog. They know that Simmons has a situation, right? They know that he's someone who will embarrass you if you don't go hard. Don't be surprised to see the guys on the interior, because Ali Marpet, their guard,
right?
He's a feisty guy too. Don't be surprised to see them throwing at Jeffrey Simmons. And when you cut block, right, your objective, you're throwing at the thigh. I mean, like, you're not trying to take a guy's knee out. I'm not saying that they're going to do that. I'm not accusing them of dirtiness to that extent. But anytime you have such a serious injury like that and someone begins to start throwing at you, I don't care what you say, it's going to affect your mindset.
Right.
So I want to see how they deal with it.
And that's something that I was concerned about with the Titans, you know, pushing him and wanting him to come back and him pushing himself. I mean, they're all – last week was great. But, you know, as you just said, teams are going to try and expose that and take advantage of the injury. So I don't want to see any setbacks because of what we saw last week of how good it was. Now, you talked to Rashawn Evans. We played that in the last segment. And we made the comparisons with Albert Haynesworth and Keith Bullock, that it opens up the lane for the linebacker behind one of these big guys. That, I think, is going to be a tag team here for a long time with Rashawn Evans and Jeff Simmons.
And that's a sweet tag team.
Oh, that's a good one.
Hey, listen, man. That Rashawn Evans, when he triggers and he goes to hit, like, it's one of those, like back in the day, Madden, right?
You
make a hard hit.
The hit stick.
Pat Summerall would be like, whap, he's on his back. And that's what you see. Whap, like that. And next thing you know, the guy is falling over. And I think that's a great point. Those two together. And you have some other pieces surrounding them. That's going to be really one to watch.
It's like the wrestling tag team, that you got the big dude that can just plow over you, and then you got the also big dude that's got some athleticism and skill that, you know, bounces off the ropes and flies right into you.
Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik.
There you go. That's what they are. But that's, I think, something this team has missed for a long time. And nothing against, you know, players that have come through here. Jarrell Casey, we know what Jarrell Casey is. But having that big defensive guy on the front, on the line, and then the linebacker behind him that can clean it up and, you know, rack up those tackles or sacks. I mean, how many sacks did Keith Bullock get in his career? I think that's something that they've needed. And with this Dean Pease defense and everything Dean Pease likes to do, it's only going to get better.
Yeah, and man, let me say something. Keith Bullock was a baller. And
one of my favorite players.
Outside of here, he doesn't get the credit he deserves, but that dude was a baller, man.
He was, and it was so much fun to, you know, be here and to watch and all of that. But, you know, I think that injury kind of cut his career short a little bit. He went to the Giants and just was never the same. But the run he had here, being drafted in the year 2000, because that 99 team was special. That 2000 team was even better, and that was his rookie year, and you just missed your Monday night. I mean, that's when he became that. So Keith Bullock, one of the best. Let's go to Chris, who also wants to weigh in on Jeffrey Simmons. Chris, welcome into Chasing TD.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. TNT, this is who it is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And TD, I got to give you a shout out. I appreciate you responding on last night on my podcast last night. I very much appreciate that.
No doubt. No doubt. I appreciated your online show. It was a good information. Good show, man. I was tuned in.
Hey, I appreciate that. And, you know, as we talk about Big Jeff, you know, he was definitely very impressive. And one of the things I really liked with Big Jeff that I noticed was his play recognition. You know, as you talked about before with the sack on Phillip Rivers, he was coming from the edge on the outside, noticed that Phillip Rivers was going to step up in the pocket, and he goes immediately to him and get the sack. Another play that happened, you know, besides the tackle for a loss, was I think it was on a screen pass. He's going upfield. He notices that nobody's blocking him. He immediately recognized screen pass. He immediately recognized it and helped David Long make the big play of stopping that screen from it happening. And that's something that I really like is his intelligence, his intellect to recognize plays. And as some people, as you have already said, he's not even 100% yet. Imagine how he's going to be at 100% because him, you know, him and Rashawn Evans, they're going to be great. And him and Jarrell Casey, they could become best friends. They're going to become best friends. It's going to be very difficult for any line to block both of those guys, in my opinion.
It's definitely going to be difficult for any line. And Chris mentions the sack.
Chris.
And I tell you, that was something he and Daquan, they had the game going on.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with TD, you know what I'm saying? We broke that down. I had Jeffrey talking about four plays. So make sure you guys stay after this show to hear that. But, yeah, it's definitely going to be something to grow on, that those three are all together.
When we come back, the Bucs defense versus the run. We'll get into that. Plus, you'll hear Jordan Reed. Teron had a conversation with him from the Draft Network. You'll hear that coming up at 7:15. It is Chase and TD on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hour number two, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith behind the glass. Talking Tennessee Titans with you. Thought I was going to sneeze there for a second. I was like, huh, how am I going to handle this situation?
I thought you were saying short for Titans.
Yeah.
They have this thing, right? And if you're like, Marcus, what are you thinking? Not Marcus Mariota. The dude's name is Marcus. And he said, well, if they call the Buccaneers the Bucks for short, what do they call the Titans? I thought that's where you were going.
No, wasn't going to go there because I know what that would be.
I know. And, man. Get a little comedy
Ryan
in there,
Ryan Porth
man.
Would be calling me. So the Bucs defense, we've touched on it. Jenna Lane was on earlier and Shaq Barrett and Vita Vey, obviously, and Ndamukong Suh a part of that. But versus the run, they have been very, very good this year against the run. They've already played the Carolina Panthers twice, and Christian McCaffrey, who was having an MVP-like season, was basically nothing against the Bucs defense against that run. So what do we expect out of Derrick Henry on Sunday?
I think I would expect 80 to 90 yards out of Derrick Henry on Sunday, and I get it. I know this team is giving up 68 yards per game, but you know what? The Titans are dedicated to running the football. Arthur Smith, he wants to run the football. I mean, that's really the bottom line. And here's the thing. Like Henry said in the opening segment when we had his segment on, it gets better in the fourth quarter. You saw it in the last game, in the Chargers game. As the fourth quarter starts to come around, you know, those runs begin to get more effective. And then the other thing is, if this is a team that has a lead, if the Titans have a lead, you go into that four-minute offense, and you know what ends up happening. You know, Derrick Henry ends up taking control of the game. Derrick Henry in the offensive line. Trust me, you ask any one of those offensive linemen, they want to fire off the football and go generate that contact instead of catching it. And one way to do that is running the ball.
I've brought this up on the show before, but in July at SEC Media Days, Nick Saban came and sat down at our table. We asked him about Derrick Henry and what he's seen out of Derrick Henry – in his NFL career. And Saban gave a great answer in saying when he was at Alabama, you know, they had Kenyon Drake as well. And the plan was they were going to try and split up the carries and use both. And Drake got hurt, and they had to rely on Derrick Henry a little bit more than they thought they were going to have to. But he said that because of that, the more they gave him the football, the better off he was, and they realized they couldn't stop giving him the football because that's just how Derrick Henry is. You've seen it in his NFL career.
Yeah.
The more you keep running him, the better he gets as the game goes on.
Exactly. He's like a Dodge Ram truck, a Nissan Titan truck, right? As you begin to break them in, you really start to really feel the impact and the capabilities that they bring. So that's what I would expect to see. And Derrick Henry actually spoke about just the importance of sticking to the run. So I think that's going to be something. But, you know, the thing when you look at the Bucs defense, all three levels are really good. You know, Jenna talked about Levante David, you know, being a tackling machine. Devin White developing into a tackle machine. Jordan Whitehead, I really like him, man. 31, one of their safeties. I remember watching him at Pitt. You know, he's a guy that was a – I mean, he's not the biggest dude, but he sells out, man. He will come up and make plays against the run. The way he comes up and supports the run, I'm not comparing greatness. I'm just comparing just giving every ounce of their body into a tackle. It reminds me of Earl Thomas, the way he is against the run. So even the guys up front.
I mean, Ndamukong Suh's been pretty good against the run, too.
He's not chopped liver, right? No. You know what
I mean? He's not the same that he used to be, but he's still – To the point of an Albert Haynesworth, he's one of those guys that you can't ignore him. You kind of have to respect him.
Right, you have to respect. And he got Vita Vea clogged in the middle.
I like
then
him, too.
They rotate in Bo Allen. I mean, they're pretty complete. I actually asked Mike Vrabel about their defense, the Bucs defense. And, you know, Vrabel was very complimentary of him. Let's hear what he had to say.
No discredit or disservice to any of those other players, but these guys are a load inside. You know, and the thing that I can appreciate is that they play with technique. They're not just running all over the place. When you see these guys, they put their hands in the chest of the offensive lineman. They play good pad level, great effort, extension. When the ball declares, they shed and get off, and whether it's in their gap or, you know, a backside gap to make a play. And then, you know, linebackers are fast. Levante David is obviously a tackling machine. White's working his way back in there. Whitehead will trigger in support as a safety. I think they play with a lot of effort, and this is a good tackling team. That's kind of what you take from it, is that they're a very good tackling defense, and when you do that, you have an opportunity to limit the yards after contact.
Mike Vrabel on that defense by the Tampa Bay Bucs. And, you know, Carl Nassib is somebody else that Jenna Lane brought up that, you know, we remember him a few years ago from Hard Knocks and doing everybody's accounting or whatever it was. But a pretty good player in his own right now with the Bucs.
Yeah, he's – and, you know, the thing, he's very aggressive. I like that
Penn
about
State,
him.
Right?
Penn State, exactly. And actually he had a brother that went to Syracuse and played quarterback, Ryan Nassib. You know, so there's some genes in that family. But, he's a really good player. And, like, you know, you mix in Shaq Barrett. They have a very good run defense. Now, the thing is, they're first against the run, dead last against the pass. And I don't know if there's a more defensive oxymoron than that, man. Like, how do you have such that separation?
And Vernon Hargraves, I mean, as one of the corners, you know, I know that's somebody that a lot of people liked.
I was really high on him coming out. Yeah, I remember, you know, that class with Hargraves and Mackenzie Alexander. I was like, yeah, man, this is going to be a really good class with those two especially. And those guys are good players, but, you know, they're not as good as I thought they would be. But that's the thing with this team. And actually, before we came on, I was going over a couple plays with Calvin that I saw in the three games that I watched. And there are ways that you could pass. And there's a reason why teams are throwing the football against them so well. And one of the things that I saw, who the heck was it, Calvin? I think it was the Rams. The Rams, they had tight end trips on one side, right? And then it was 12 personnel, right? But tight end trips on one side. And then they had a tight end on inline on the opposite side. And what they did was try to, like, they had the receivers run the corner, run the DBs off that are over top of them. And then the tight end, I'm trying to remember. I still don't remember what the tight end did on that trip side for all the way inside. But long story short, they ran a play fake to the left, right? Stretch play. They showed the stretch play. And Jared Goff hooked up. And he, after the play action, he threw to the tight end. It was very similar to the play where Jonnu Smith had that 61-yard catch and run, whereas it was just basically a tight end screen on the backside off of play action. And that's what they did, and it was a pretty good game. So basically I say that to say that it's a way that they used the all-out aggressiveness to stop the run against the Bucs.
So here's my question with what you were just saying about the passing game. We saw a pretty good passing game out of the Tennessee Titans last week. Now, as I pointed out earlier, they threw the ball 30 times. They ran the ball 29 times. So that's balance. But if Derrick Henry is taken out of the game, at least for the time being, by the Bucs defense, do you think that Ryan Tannehill is going to be able to have, maybe not a 300-yard performance like he did last week, but able to spread the ball around to different receivers like he did? He found Davis, Smith, Brown,
Humphreys.
Found
eight different players.
Yeah, so yeah. He found everybody that he had on offense pretty much. Will he be able to do that again?
Well, here's the other thing. They run, their nickel guy, MJ Barrett. I don't believe that he could carry MJ Stewart. Excuse me. I don't believe that he could carry Adam Humphreys. And you saw Humphreys begin to emerge last week. I think that's going to continue this week. And frankly, I feel as though Tannehill needs to have 35 to 40 attempts this week. That's how I feel. I think collectively running the football, they should be 20 to 25. Attempts running the football.
But I agree
with you. He needs
to
have 35 to 40. You have to take advantage of what this team is just ridiculously bad at doing. You know, throw the football.
I meant to do this at the top of the show, so I got to say this now about passing the football. Calvin, when we were doing the kickoff, he said the thing that he wanted to see first play was them throw the football. Mm-hmm. Not hand off to Henry. He wanted to see – he didn't have to air it out, but he wanted to see Tannehill – throw some sort of pass, and they did that. So, Calvin, congratulations. You got what you wanted.
Just getting his feet wet, and then he made that really good throw to Jonnu Smith, like Teron talked about earlier on in the show, which was a good throw. And just letting Ryan Tannehill get his feet wet was really what I wanted to see early on.
There's mathematics to this thing, right? You know what I mean? And
I kind of want to see the same thing.
I think in this case, you needed to get him off to a hot start. I think this week you need to get him off to a hot start again and just rely on him. Because one of the things that they do a lot of is they run that jumbo package with one receiver, and that one receiver is A.J. Brown. Play action, they hit him on that crossing route, and he just has a way of being able to, get open on that.
When we come back, you were able to talk to Jordan Reed from the Draft Network. I know you guys got into a lot of different things in the NFL and the Tennessee Titans. You'll hear that conversation when we come back. It's Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Okay, so now that we're back from the break, as promised, I'm going to bring you a guy who's played the position. I mean, you guys have heard him on Talking with TD before, former D1 quarterback Jordan Reed. And I'm not going to ask you if you're suiting up this week like a lot of people do. You know, I'm not going to confuse you with the tight end, man, because I know you. What's good, man?
Good, man. Happy to be here once again. You know, I always love coming on with you. It's always a blast, so thanks as always.
Yeah, for sure, man. I appreciate you coming on. And the thing is, on Twitter you have posted something. You started to talk a little bit about Jalen Hurts, and I asked you about him. And then I said, well, you know what? Let's just go ahead and do it for the show, because that's what I want to do. I want to bring important and knowledgeable takes to my listeners. So when you look at just the quarterback position itself, right? Ryan Tannehill, he was under center, and it seemed like the offense seemed to flow a little bit better. He was more decisive. You've played the position. What goes into being a more decisive quarterback, and how does that help the offense just keep that rhythm going?
Well, it's really a combination of three things. I would say is protection, play caller, and actual playmakers around him. And then in Miami, we know he didn't have a great supporting cast. And sometimes it's just better for some guys to have a change of scenery, and that's what we're seeing with Ryan Tannehill. And everyone knows he struggled to stay healthy. That's been the biggest thing about him. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, I should say. But maybe a change of scenery would help him, and that's exactly what he did in Tennessee. And he wasn't expected to come in and be the savior, everything like that, just because coming into the season, everyone knew that it was Marcus Mariota's job to lose, and we've known for quite some time now that Marcus Mariota just hasn't been able to be consistent with four offensive coordinators in 5 years. That is very tough, but the consistency has just been so up and down for him. And then Tannehill comes in last game, and the operation seemed to be a bit smoother. He looked very decisive, and he just trust his protection up front, and also the plays that were being called, he looked to know what was going on. He's very decisive, and he knew where to go with the ball. So that really was a pleasant surprise, and it was really welcome to see that from him.
Yeah, excellent point. There were a couple of throws that he made to Corey Davis, the touchdown, the 8-yard one. If he wasn't decisive on that, that's intercepted. Then he had another tight window one to Corey Davis on a 38-yard reception, and even the placement, the ball placement on the first throw that he made, which was to Jonnu Smith. What are some of the things that you've seen from Tannehill from a ball placement perspective? Is that something that's new, or is that something that you've seen over time?
Well, it's kind of been up and down with him, and his accuracy has already been shaky coming into his time with the Dolphins, just because he hadn't played the position for a very long time. And for a lot of people that really don't know about Ryan Tannehill's background, he really started out as a receiver in his time at Texas A&M, and then he played the quarterback position for 1 year before being a first-round pick. So he was always labeled as that raw guy that maybe had the tools to eventually show some type of upside, and the Dolphins really gave him 4 years to really prove that, and he just didn't necessarily prove their point to be correct. And even though they gave him a bunch of chances there, and he always has what I like to call a first-round sticker, and that coaches are always going to feel like they can get that potential out of them and maybe prove why they were a first-round selection, and maybe scratch that surface of the potential that made them a first-round selection. And I think that was one of the biggest reasons why the Titans were so interested in him, and they ended up signing him as the backup, just because having that insurance behind Marcus Mariota, a guy that has been up and down a roller coaster for the most part, and then he's been battling inconsistencies and also injuries as well. So having Ryan Tannehill as a backup was very serviceable, and maybe they can get him to show some of that promise that made him an eventual first-round selection.
And folks, we're talking to Jordan Reed of the Draft Network. Make sure you guys go and check out his work along with the work of the whole group, man. It's a solid group. And anytime, I want to get some draft input and just see if what I'm seeing matches what the experts are seeing, this is one of the folks I go to. Jordan, you mentioned the first round sticker for Ryan Tannehill. That being said, is this a sticker that the Titans should continue after this season to try to make him live up to?
I don't think so. I think they should treat him as if he isn't there. And I know that's kind of some cruel words to say, but I just don't think they should hitch their wagon to Ryan Tannehill just because he's only came in mop-up duty. And I think it kind of is fool's gold. And I don't want to say that as a knock against him, but he's had ample opportunities to prove exactly what he can be. And I think he is what he is at this point, and that shouldn't take them away or deter them away from drafting a quarterback maybe in the first or the second round this year. I just think they need a new facelift, and they need a new face of the franchise, just because the Marcus Mariota thing, I just think that ship has sailed to this point, and we saw that last game where they just essentially gave up on him, and they insert Tannehill just to see what they have in him. But I don't think Tannehill and what he shows this year, I don't think that should keep them away from drafting a quarterback early.
So before I get you to match prospects to the Titans, real quick, your top five quarterback rankings for this prospect class.
Yeah, so right now I have it as Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow, surprisingly. Those guys are like the tier one, and I think those two have really separated themselves from the pack to this point. And, of course, we know these rankings are always fluid, and they always could change. And then in that second tier, I have Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, and Jacob Eason. Those really are the next tier. I have him in tiers right now just because I think it's a little early right now for rankings, just because we know those resumes really are unfinished right now, just because the college football season isn't over until the first week in January. So all of these guys have a lot of opportunities to prove themselves in what I like to call resume games, especially getting into the meat of the conference schedule. And then in that third tier, you have Jake Fromm, Jalen Hurts, and guys of that nature. So it is a very deep quarterback class, I would like to say.
Now, I will say your Jordan Love post was really good. You took a deep dive into what he brings. So that was a good post there. I remember you talking about him on Twitter as well as a guy to watch. So that being said, with this Titans team and this front office, this coaching staff, what quarterbacks do you feel best match them, and what round are you thinking? I would say let's look at the first two rounds. I think they need to take a guy within the first two rounds. So what quarterbacks match and when?
Well, I think Tua and Burrow is kind of be out of the question for them, just because I think the way it's trending right now, both of those guys are probably going to be top three selections. I think it's trending in that direction. But if the Titans are expected to pick maybe top 15 or top 10 or somewhere in that range, we'll see how they do end up finishing this year. But you're talking about guys like Justin Herbert and Jordan Love and Jacob Eason. I think both of those guys definitely will be viable candidates for them. Now, as far as the guys that really match up for them, I think Justin Herbert would definitely be a good fit. I think he's a bit further along than what Jordan Love and Jacob Eason is right now, just because both of them are raw in a sense. And I think Herbert is further along considering he is a senior and a four-year starter to this point. So I think Herbert is a bit further along than those other two. I think both of those probably need a year to sit. And if you have that bridge guy in front of them, and, I mean, the Titans, I don't want to say they're out of the situation for those other two, just because if they treat Tannehill like a bridge guy, maybe they do bridge that gap for another year between Jordan Love and Jacob Eason, maybe for them to start in 2021 if they want to hitch their wagon to Ryan Tannehill and treat him like that bridge quarterback. But if they want a guy to start right now from day one, I think Justin Herbert would be their guy.
Skill set wise, what is it about Herbert that makes you say that he's the fit?
Well, he has everything that you're looking for. He's very smart. Everyone, he is just so smart. And that's the biggest thing that you hear about Justin Herbert, 4.0 GPA, a biology major. Everyone just gushes about his instincts and his moxie and his leadership. That's the first thing that everyone talks about him. Now, he has a bit of a reserved manner, which a lot of people have a lot of mixed opinions about, just because he's more of a quiet leader. He's more of a rah-rah guy. So the leadership questions will always come up about him, but I think those will kind of be overblown just because that is his personality in a sense. But as far as arm strength, intangibles, accuracy, he has all of that. The biggest thing with him is just consistency, and that's something that he struggled with even going back to last week's game against Washington, where he did throw four touchdowns. But there's just such a mixed bag of where he'll make NFL ready throws, and then he'll come back and he'll just make a puzzling decision and he'll throw one right in the dirt. So just consistency and cleaning up those things are the biggest thing that he needs to work on.
And folks, we're talking to Jordan Reed of the Draft Network. Make sure you check his workout. Before I let you go, just in conclusion, you mentioned Jacob Eason. Now, he's a guy who, you know, I've heard people talk about, but not as many people. What does he bring to the table? Kind of shine a light on his game for our listeners.
Well, he reminds me a bit of Josh Allen coming out a couple years ago, but I think he's a bit more polished as a thrower than what Allen was coming out a few years ago in that 2018 class. And I say a bit more polished, I think his accuracy is a bit better than what Allen's was, just because Allen was a bit of a flame thrower, but you really didn't know where those darts were going to end up. Either they were going to hit the board or they were going to fall by the wayside. And I think Eason is a little bit more accurate than what he was coming out. And I made this comparison on Twitter a couple of days ago, and that he reminds me a lot of Matthew Stafford.
Okay.
And if you remember, the biggest question about Stafford was his accuracy and if he just could control some of the chaos that he throws with. And that's exactly what you see with Jacob Eason, that arm strength. That's the first thing that stands out about him. He's a very tall guy, 6'6", 230 pounds, but he has a bit of a slender frame. He does need to fill out a little bit, and that's just because he sat out all of last year. He transferred from Georgia to Washington just because Jake Fromm took that job over after he did get hurt at Georgia. So he sat out a year, and he didn't bulk up a whole bunch. You would like to see him fill out his frame a little bit more, but just controlling some of that chaos that he does play with. And he's done a better job of that this year. And I think he's still a year away from being a starting caliber NFL quarterback. But as far as upside, I think it's as good as any quarterback in this class.
Nice, nice. Now, you never evaluate by school, but it's just interesting that the two guys you mentioned, you know, are guys that went to Oregon and Washington. And when you mention those schools, Mariota and Jake Locker come to mind. Folks, as you're watching them, don't even think about Mariota or Locker is two different prospects. So don't think of it that way. Jordan, before we let you go, go ahead and let the folks know where they could find your work. And also, if you have anything, oh, I'm sure you do. So let's say what you have coming down the line that definitely needs to be recognized and taken note of.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at JReedNFL. That's at JReedNFL. And no, I am not the Washington Redskins tight end, as I have been mistaken for a lot of times before. You can find my work also on thedraftnetwork.com along with my colleagues. We're doing some really good things. We're going to release our rankings here in the next few weeks or so. And I actually have a new mock draft coming out next Monday. And it'll be my second edition of my mock draft of the year. So make sure to be on the lookout for that. I may or may not give the Titans a new shiny new toy under center at quarterback. So definitely be on the lookout for that. But once again, you can find me on Twitter at JReedNFL. And I'll post a bunch of clips, just things that I'm thinking as well. So thank you guys again for the follow. And it would be greatly appreciated if you follow me on there.
Folks, he's a must follow. And come draft time, that mock draft simulator is second to none. Jordan, I appreciate you. And definitely keep killing it the way you are.
Thanks as always.
Jordan Reed from the Draft Network. You talked to him, and a lot of good stuff to decompress from there about the quarterback and what the Titans could look for in their next signal caller. That's something that we're going to have to discuss in the coming weeks here on the show. But what about the former first-round pick that they had at quarterback, Marcus Mariota, who is now the backup? We'll throw some things out there. We'll discuss a little bit what could be next for him and for the Tennessee Titans on Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. It's Michael Jackson here on Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith doing a fine job behind the glass. 7 a.m. Sunday morning. Calvin and Max Herz will have the kickoff for you.
Back at it bright and early. I'll get my run in and then come here all jazzed up for some Titans football.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not going to get up early with you this week, but Chaser needs a break. That's what Chase needs. But I will see you at the game.
You'll see me at the game, and we'll have all kinds of coverage on 102.5 The Game at on Twitter and as well as T Davenport_NFL.
And I haven't said this yet on this show, but shout out to my dude.
I was just about to go.
Shout out to my dude, Derek Mason, being the 12th Titan alongside Chris Johnson. And people may ask, okay, well, they didn't play together, so what's the significance? Well, it's been 20 years since the Super Bowl team, which Derek was a big part of, and 10 years since the birth of CJ2K. So that is the correlation with both. It's alumni weekend. And did you look at the list? A lot of names coming back here.
I didn't look at the list.
Yeah, that defensive line that we talked about with Albert Haynesworth, pretty much everybody from that 2008 year, except for Curse, they're slated to be here.
You think Van der Bosch has the red contact?
I hope so. Man, that was scary. scary stuff.
That's crazy.
This is going to be a horrible transition, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Hey.
A future Titans alum, Marcus Mariota.
Listen, we played the music. Do you remember the time?
Yeah.
You know, back in the park, on the phone.
Yeah.
You and me.
Yeah.
There was a day where, you know, this city was in love with Mr. Mariota.
I am curious of 5-10 years from now, you know, when they have alumni weekend, does he, you know, what is that going to be like?
He's still playing.
It could be.
5 years.
I mean, you never know. So what is next for him? We'll get into what's next for the Titans, because I'm going to throw something at you that has kind of been out there. But
duck.
Duck. But for Marcus, we were spitballing a little bit last week about good fits for him. I think the Andy Reid quarterback rehabilitation program would be the best fit for him to go back up Patrick Mahomes and play for Andy Reid for a year or two.
With Peterson.
Or Doug Peterson in Philadelphia would be a good fit. So I like those, but what do you think? What's next?
I tell you one other thing that came out, because we had actually, there's a post on ESPN.com. Jenna Lane and I, our earlier guests.
Did a good job.
We had a thank you. We had a collaboration. We just looked at just what happened, what's next, and different things. And in that whole process, I reached out to a few people, talked to some people. One of the guys I talked to was Jeff Dickerson, who covers the Bears for ESPN. And he mentioned, and it makes sense. I mean, when they were looking for an OC, what did we say? Helfrich should be a candidate.
Yeah.
Well, he's in Chicago. So the Bears don't have a first-round pick. And let's face it, Trubisky, just to use improper English, Trubisky ain't it.
Right.
Right? So they can't draft a quarterback in the first round to come in and play, but they can for sure.
That's interesting. And Matt Nagy is the head coach. Helfrich.
I think it's a good match. I think it's a good idea. And a guy like Marcus would be awesome for the Bears because, look, man, that defense is tremendous. You know what I mean? So he doesn't have to take all of the risk. He doesn't have to spearhead an offense that scores 30 points a game. Basically, it's I need you to go out there and make a couple plays. Don't turn the ball over. Defense is going to make it happen. I need, just get the ball in the end zone a few times, and you're fine. You know, so I think that really is the best match that you could think of for Mariota.
I could see teams that are, you know, going to be looking for a start, and Chicago is definitely in that category. Cincinnati, I don't like that for him necessarily because that's just a bad team.
Yeah, I had mentioned, but you know what? I'm gonna Adoree Jackson.
You know, backpedal?
Backpedal. You know what I mean? I got to stay in phase, right? I can't completely get out of phase.
And last week when we were having this conversation, you mentioned the L.A. Chargers backing up Rivers because of the familiarity with Wisenhunt. Here's why I disagree. I'll push back on that. I think Ken Wisenhunt is a big reason of why the Titans are in the mess that they're in.
Hmm.
Because I think that his offense was catered to a quarterback like a Kurt Warner or a Phillip Rivers, that type of passer, and he tried to make Marcus something that he wasn't. And so that's why I don't think he would be a good – it's the same thing with Jake Locker. I mean, he tried to make Jake Locker into Phillip Rivers, and that wasn't going to work.
Yeah, and that's just terrible as a coach.
Yeah, and that's what used to drive me crazy about Wisenhunt and why I like Arthur Smith and even Matt LaFleur of – hey, I'm going to take my coaching style and I'm going to adapt it to you because you're the one that has to run it. I want you to run my offense, but let's make it work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just some OCs and head coaches aren't willing to do that. Now, let me throw this at you. As for the Tennessee Titans, because they need a quarterback too. We've thrown out draft prospects. That may be the direction that they end up going in the first round, and there will be some good options available. But is that the win now fix? Or do they need to have an established starter to come in and be the guy to try and win now? So you may ask yourself, okay, well, who's really available? Thought I was going to sneeze again. Who is really available to come in? When Adam Schefter speaks, I tend to listen. And Adam Schefter, last week, on their Sunday NFL countdown, was discussing a quarterback that is in the last year of his contract. His house is for sale. There's always rumors about could he leave the team that he's on. And that quarterback is named Tom Brady. Could Tom Brady actually leave New England and go play somewhere else to end his career? I think the likelihood of that happening, probably not very good. But you never know. It could be a situation, as I threw out on the midday show, it could be a situation where he's like, you know what? I'm going to pull myself away from Belichick and show you that it wasn't the system.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Schefter was on Get Up yesterday, and he said there's three things that could happen, right? Brady stays, he retires, or he leaves. And Schefter said the least likely is him staying. I don't know if Brady will retire or not.
I think it's more likely he leaves than retires.
And, you know, here's the thing. These guys are like, Brady is one of the most competitive football players, you know, mm-hmm. to ever. You see it, right, during training camp when they were here. I mean, one of the receivers didn't run the right route. He was 10 yards down the field. Dog him cussing up. Him. You know what I mean? I don't think it would be out of the ordinary for him to go someplace else. I don't know why he would do it, though. I mean, right. I think, like, it, for me, if I was in those shoes, I'd rather just, all right, my legacy is here. This is it.
But you know, go ahead.
Interesting point, though. Steve Young was on NFL Live yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and they asked him, and he said, well, you know, when it was time for me to retire, I went to Jerry Rice, and I said, Jerry, let's go out together. And Jerry was like, heck no, I'm going to wherever to Oakland.
Yeah.
Steve Young had the chance to go to Denver, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Young said, looking back on it, he understands the value of having played a long time with one team. Now, granted, he had the shortstop with the Bucks. But he understands the value of
the
that.
The USFL.
Well, USFL, too, the LA Express. But he said he's not so sure that was the best decision. Like, he kind of had a little hindsight 2020. So I wonder if Brady would have that same thought. And then on top of that, coming here and playing for a guy, you know.
He's going to play for one of his friends.
He walked onto the field. What did Vrabel say?
Yeah.
Hey, look, Tom, you're still walking onto the field. And what did Brady say? Oh, you're working on your own beep.
Yeah.
And work on your own. Worry about your own beep. And then even you had the exchange with the trophy for the Titans beating the Patriots last year. I could see that. And I think it would be a good fit.
So here's my take on all this. Number one, first part of this. If Tom Brady says, hey, I'm out, I'm leaving New England, I'm going to go play for the Tennessee Titans. I'm going to go play for my buddy Mike, my buddy John. I'm going to go hang out and do that. National media, everybody's going to be like, oh, what's he doing? Could this tarnish his legacy? What if Belichick was the key? And what if he goes and he just flames out? Number one, Tom Brady doesn't give a rat's you know what. He's done it. He's like, he's got his skins on the wall. He's got his checklist. And all he has to do is point at that, and it shuts everybody up. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what he does in his last few years. It doesn't.
Who remembers Joe Namath played for the Chargers?
I don't.
Right.
I remember he played for the Chiefs. Joe Montana played for the Chiefs. Yeah. Namath, no, I don't remember that. Obviously before my time.
So you're right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. He can go and do whatever he wants and flame out miserably, and nobody will care. He's still a first ballot Hall of Famer. He still won more Super Bowls than anyone else. So it doesn't matter.
He's the best quarterback ever.
He's the best ever. Now, as for the Titans, let's say, you know, they have those conversations. John's like, Tom, I'd love to have you here. Here's the deal. We are drafting a quarterback. We are going to develop a quarterback of the future. As long as you're cool with that, here's whatever money he wants. You fill it in. You come here, and we take it year to year until you're ready to hang it up. If that's the conversation and everybody's cool with it, I'm cool with it.
I think it's a good deal. And then we have.
And if it flames out, it flames out.
Yeah, you could say, listen, man, I went down swinging. And then Jordan Reed, he had the excellent point. You know, Jacob Eason as a guy that you could develop. You sit him in the incubator, right? You know, up underneath Tom Brady.
Yeah, because by the way, folks, that's okay. It's okay to draft a guy in the first round and let him sit for a couple of years.
Right? It's okay to do that, but at the same time, that would be a lot of money tied up in the position.
I
mentioned Eason. I think if you could put that in the second round, you know, if you could go in the second round and make that happen, that would be a good.
So as we wrap this up, $25 million, $30 million, what would you pay him?
I think you would only have to pay him 25 because this dude,
he's got his money.
So much off the field,
right?
All types of deals, Uggs, boots, all that stuff, man.
I think it'd be a win-win, and you can connect some other dots. There are other dots that you can connect for sure.
Yeah,
you know, if McDaniels ends up leaving and takes a coaching job, he could go with him. But I just feel like this could be the best fit. Do I really truly believe it's going to happen? No. Not really. No. But could it, and would it be the right move? Yes. He is Teron Davenport. I'm Chase McCabe. Calvin Smith behind the glass. The Mac Daddy coming up when we come back, and plus what we're Mac watching for. Daddy. We'll do that on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Who's the Mac Daddy?
Mac Daddy. Mac Daddy. Mac Daddy. Mac Daddy. You're the mic, you're
we're back. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sunday morning, 7 a.m. Join Calvin and Max Hurst for the kickoff. And then NFL pregame at 9:30. Coming up after this show, talking with TD. A lot of good stuff, so stick around for that. But it is time for the Mock Daddy of the week. Now, I had choices. I had a lot of choices this week. Ryan Tannehill, he had a good week. 23 of 29, 312 yards, two touchdowns. Did have a pick, but arm got hit. Wasn't really, you know, didn't do it on purpose, obviously. Brett Kern continues to be the MVP. Kevin Byard, he's one of the MVPs on this team. Corey Davis, 80 yards. A.J. Brown, 64 yards. A lot of candidates.
Wesley Woodyard.
Wesley Woodyard, the lumberjack. But I'm going to tell you who I'm going to go with. Taylor Lewan. No penalties for Taylor Lewan. And I believe I saw in Pro Football Focus, he graded as the best player for the Titans this week.
Well,
he played his game. That was the Taylor Lewan that I expected to see.
I won't.
And if you want to push back, push back. I'm totally open to that. But
I'll overlook their gradings. But what I will say, and the reason why I didn't mention him, because I thought that that's who you were going to pick. Listen, man, I'm going with that dude that got gorilla strength. He hadn't played a game since January 1st.
Big Jeff went
out there and looked like he just played the previous week. Mac Daddy, for me, if I was picking, it would be Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good choice. Making his debut, gets his first career sack. I agree. I mean, that's a good one. But I wanted to be different, so
hey,
I went Taylor Lewan.
Different is good.
So, Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
In town, the Bucs, alumni weekend. What are we looking for? Who are you watching on offense? We'll start with the Tennessee Titans.
Starting with the Titans on offense. Hey, listen, you're going to see me pick him frequently. DH22, that is a train I think the Titans need to get on. I think if they could – now, here's the thing. If they could establish the run, right, and anytime you talk to a defensive coach, they'll tell you, when teams are able to run the football on us, it's deflating.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a team like the Bucs, where the only thing their defense is good at is stopping the run.
Right.
You run the ball on them, guess what? Their will is broken. So for me, Derrick Henry is the guy to watch.
You said 80 or 90 yards.
80 to 90 yards.
On Darren Donick and Chase, we do a contest on Friday. It's called Pick Six.
Pick Six.
One of the questions is over under 49.5 yards for Derrick Henry.
We all took the under.
So I'm listening to you. If he gets 80 or 90 yards, they're winning this football game.
Without a doubt
about it. Offense for me, I'm very consistent in my message. Do it again. That starts with the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. I will be paying attention to him very, very closely. He played a really good game last week against the LA Chargers.
Yeah.
He's got to do it again.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the support around him having a lot to do with it. That's going to be the offensive line having a lot to do with it. That's going to be himself not making mistakes that he has been known to make in the past. If he can play a consistent game like he did last week and do it again, I feel really good about the Titans' chances, so I'm watching Tannehill.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I always leave the quarterback out of that as far as
what to watch. Well, I have a theme this watch. Week. So.
But, I mean, hey, look, he's definitely someone to watch. On offense for the Bucs, for me, you know, I think it's Chris Godwin. I mean, he's a dude. He's tied. I think he's tied for first. Yeah, he's tied for first in receiving touchdowns, entering this week with six touchdowns. He's second in receiving yards, 662 yards. And he has the most yards through six games in team history. Mike Evans and Keyshawn Johnson happen to be guys that have played for this organization. He has more yards than any of them. He is someone, if you watch Bucs tape, they make a concerted effort. You hear me? Concerted effort to get him the football. He's the guy to watch for me, especially with Adoree Jackson being out.
I said there was a theme. I think it's the most important position on the field, and then for this game especially,
man,
because
stop taking the easy way.
No, I'm
out,
not.
Man.
Hear me out on this. If you get bad Jameis, then you're gonna see five turnovers or whatever it was in London.
Yeah.
If you get good Jameis,
we'll see LA Rams dropping with 45, 50 points.
Yeah. He controls that offense. Chris Godwin, great player, great choice on your part.
But I just, like I said, I always leave the quarterback.
I know.
Out,
I know.
It's just like those are obvious decisions for me.
I understand that. But I think that that offense that Bruce Arians is trying to run is so dependent on Jameis being on his game.
Yeah, every offense is, though, really.
Well, I know.
It depends on the quarterback.
So,
but, I mean, you wanted to take the easy way out. That's fine.
Fine.
You could do it this week. Next week, don't do it. No, I'm kidding. Let's move on
Teron
to defense.
Laying the rules down. All right. Okay, who you got on defense for
defense,
the Titans?
I mean, listen, man, no Adoree Jackson. I wanted to pick LeSean Sims, but I'm going to go with Malcolm Butler just because of what you saw him do. And you guys mentioned it. We talked earlier this week. Malcolm Butler going against Julio Jones and being able to do what he and that whole secondary was able to do. They have a guy who's just as physical. So I think Malcolm Butler is someone to watch going against Big Mike Evans.
For me, it's going to be somebody you talked to earlier, Rashawn Evans. Rashawn Evans is showing me something.
Yeah.
He's doing exactly what I was hoping he would do in year two. And with Jeffrey Simmons, as you pointed out, up front now, and granted, still working his way in, that's going to open it up even more for Rashawn Evans. So I'm curious to see him and how he responds. You know, can he force Jameis to be bad Jameis by getting to the quarterback? We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. That's a good selection. For me, defensively for the Bucs, I'm going with Vita Vea. And my reasoning, it goes back to what we've said about this run defense. Vrabel, he was very complimentary of Vea. And I think if they're going to slow Derrick Henry down, he's going to need to be able to not only two-gap, but get that penetration and reroute him. So he's the guy to watch for me on defense.
I mean, this should be pretty obvious for me. I've been salivating over him the entire show. Shaq Barrett. Shock daddy for him. Hey. You know, 9 sacks on the year. He hadn't had one the last 2 weeks. Does he get one? Can this offensive line contain him? I mean, he's a fun player to watch, and coming from Denver now with Tampa Bay, I mean, he's been a big hoss for them. So I'll be watching Shaquille Barrett.
27-24, Titans win.
I like it. 3 points. So it'd be the first time that the defense has allowed more than 20 points on the year, which I would kind of expect just because of the points that this offense is able to put up. He is Teron Davenport from ESPN, Calvin Smith behind the glass. I am Chase McCabe. That's going to do it for this edition of Chase and TD. A reminder, rate, subscribe, review, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Talking with TD. Not only do you get Talking with TD, you also get this show, Chase and TD, as well. So subscribe to that.
I will get one free.
BOGO, stick around. Talking with TD is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.